Consequence Podcast Network.
So I don't really know what to do for a bit here. I know this is going to shock you guys.
Oh, man.
Like, I'm not sure. I'm just not sure how to do a bit for this. I don't know. Perhaps one of you has an idea you could share with me. Just any idea. Anything off the top of your head.
Well, we could just, if we keep trying ideas and it doesn't work, we can just reset the timeline.
God damn it. No, Clint, you stepped on my joke. I'm sorry. Oh. I should have just told you what I was doing.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
It was going to be so funny. And now we're just going to have to keep this because this is a perfect example of how to just fuck yourself.
Yes.
So the whole idea is I was going to say, so I didn't have an idea for a bit written and one of you would pitch something and I'd be like, So I didn't have an idea for a bit for this time. Blah, 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 right? So then we would be stuck in a time loop. Welcome to TV Party, a podcast from the Consequence Podcast Network. I'm Allison Shoemaker.
I'm Clint Worthington, ruiner of jokes.
And this is Kate Kalzik.
We are here talking about the week in television, and it was a week in which there was some television.
Television!
And
I'm also very excited that Kate is joining us live in studio.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
We're all in our comfy clothes. Mm. Guess we've got some, yeah. Ice. Mm.
I didn't give Kate ice.
I don't get ice. I'm not enough of a regular yet. That's okay.
I'll earn that. Yeah. One of these days. Just look up at the
my
stars.
My ice fondness is a direct result of doing the drunk cast because when you're constantly drinking, when you're doing a podcast, you get like very intimately acquainted with all of the sounds that a glass can make.
Yeah.
So it's like being a low level Foley artist all the time. It's really weird.
it's great and terrifying.
Yeah. And I think it sounds amazing and it actually sounds like I'm drunk because that's what's the whole point of that podcast.
Exactly.
Kate's done it. Kate knows.
Good
right,
news.
Right.
It's fine. We're TV writers.
Yeah, I write for Consequence of Sound, and so does Allison.
And
other places, probably.
And Kate writes for other places.
Yeah, I write
you also have a TV podcast.
And my podcast is The Televerse. And,
yes. Yeah. We're very good self-promoters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, we're awesome. Okay, so...
branding.
Oh, it's so funny because you said hashtag. And I've never heard that before.
Oh.
Just kidding.
This is a night of firsts.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. All right. So let's talk about some news from TV this week. Clint, is there anything you were super excited about except for the first item in our list, which obviously we're going to be talking about later?
Yes. We will skip past that and talk about another sci-fi show that's coming out that exact same week.
Yes.
I've made my love for The Expanse known on the show before, and I'm very excited to find out that season 3 is premiering April 11th. And it came with a little bit of a teaser trailer that was okay. It was mostly, a portentous monologue by the protagonist as, all the other characters look on in the middle distance filled with doom. I love that show so much. I think it's great. I think it's really ambitious. I love that sci-fi is taking weird chances and saying, fuck the low ratings. Like, this is giving us our Game of Thrones cachet, so we're going to hold on to it. I'm really excited to actually get to see what happens after season 2.
Awesome.
That's just my thing.
That's one of my TV gaps. I mean, everybody has tons of TV gaps, but that's one of mine. Have you watched The Expanse?
Yes, I've seen some of it. I got away from it. I wasn't super enthused at the beginning of the first season.
It takes a while. If you're not on board by episode 4, then I totally get it.
Yeah, no, I watched it like a solid 5-6. I watched some of it with my dad during a break, a visit, and he was super into it, but I haven't got it. And some of the things they're doing, like the having people who live in space stretch over time, that kind of thing, is really interesting. There's a lot of compelling stuff going on, but there was also too much of I don't think I'd buy you in that hat. I don't think you're working that hat.
To me, that's the point. That's the point of his character is that he does look stupid wearing the hat. And you do find out where he gets the hat.
I'm sure. The hat needs its own backstory, clearly.
You don't see the hat for much longer. But if the hat is what's really holding you back, then keep going. And also, season 2 allows Shori Agdashloo to swear a whole lot more, which is very exciting because she's very sassy.
God,
wears
in
awesome
that
outfits.
Voice.
Yeah. It's so beautiful.
That's awesome.
She's just a beautiful
person. I might have to just find some sort of supercut of her swearing.
You're not wrong.
I'm having a similar experience when I'm catching episodes of Counterpart because J.K. Simmons has that really satisfying voice. And every time he swears, I'm like, that's so great. I guess I just figured out that one of life's pleasures for me is listening to people with beautiful speaking voices curse.
Yes, it's pretty amazing.
I love it.
Does Counterpart, I haven't seen it, does it allow J.K. Simmons to show off the muscles he got jacked for Justice League that
Not
they
really.
Hid under his coat?
Not really.
That's unfortunate.
He's There's a little, but no, he's mostly a, like, slightly nebbish.
Oh,
it's good though. Yep. I'm watching in little tiny bits and pieces because Tom is watching it, and it's not something I've committed to watching from the beginning yet. Okay. So I have no idea what's going on, but I can usually guess at least some of it from context clues, and it is wild. Chestnuts. Are you watching that one? You must be.
No, I'm not watching that one because I have this thing that I'm developing where when a show is promoting itself, and this came up with the new Alan Ball show too, if they don't feel the need to at least list the actors of characters who are, you know, not dudes, then I probably don't care about the show. So I don't really need another middle-aged white guy. Even an amazing actor like J.K. Simmons having identity issues and life is so hard when there aren't other female characters that are worth talking about. And in the new Alan Ball series, when the description had, like, the entire cast for the white family or the adopted family and just, like, oh, there's a Muslim family. You don't need to know who any of the actors are. I was like, I'm not interested in your priorities, so there's too much TV. So
Counterpart an Amazon show?
No, Stars.
Oh, Stars. It feels like one of those Amazon shows that just feels purely like a prop for like a leading vehicle for a prestigious character actor.
No,
like
a
Goliath or Hand of God.
Yeah, my impression is not that. I mean, it's an ensemble show. It's just that he's far and away the biggest name.
Yeah.
But I think like a lot of Stars shows, it's pretty ensemble focused.
Mm-hmm.
My very favorite thing about it though is that Stars always, after every episode they do, they run this giant like super cut around some kind of theme where they promote like every hot show in their arsenal, which means inevitably there's always a shot of the two main characters on Outlander fucking while J.K. Simmons is talking about something else. And it makes me laugh so hard every time. Like, it's just the best. Or it'll be like they'll be talking about Power, and then they'll be Claire and Jamie fucking. Or they'll be talking about American Gods, and then they'll be Claire and Jamie fucking. Or they'll be Claire and Jamie talking, and then somebody on American Gods is fucking, and that's fine too.
Right.
It's just really funny.
They should just have a consistent picture-in-picture scene of them fucking.
Totally.
Like, during all of
it
the
just
content.
Makes me laugh really hard.
Ash versus Evil Dead, you know. Just
yeah, no, that's one of them. And then it'll be Bruce Campbell talking about something while Claire and Jamie are fucking, and it makes me laugh so hard. It's just, and Outlander is such an outlier in that, in their universe right now. Like, there are a bunch of kind of odd shows, and it's not like they haven't done period drama before, but it's so female gaze in the middle of all of this other stuff. It's just really funny.
Nice.
So I was excited about the announcement of the next three hosts for SNL. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that happened. They did their usual thing where they tweet out the photo of the date and the host and the musical guest. And I don't really give a fuck about the musical guests in this case. And I wish that one of these people were female. But the next three hosts I think could be really fun. The first one is Charles Barkley, who's probably going to be hilariously bad, but like endearingly hilariously bad.
Yeah.
Because he's so good on television and is so not an actor that I think it could be really fun. The second one I am so excited about because it's Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah. Yes.
And I just can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. I hope he does a Black Panther sketch and a This Is Us sketch.
I hope they're the same sketch.
I don't.
No.
I definitely don't.
Dang.
I want an episode. I want them to do a sketch that's like the sketch from when Emma Stone hosted and they were all crying listening to that Adele song in The Office.
Uh-huh.
But for This Is Us. That's what I want.
Okay.
Where Sterling K. Brown is just making everybody cry.
Uh-huh.
And then Bill Hader, which I think will be really, really fun.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's linked with the promotion of his new series that's going to be on HBO.
Yeah.
Barry. Which I'm also excited about.
Cool.
But that was not the only exciting hosting news. We also know Michelle Wolf is going to be hosting the Correspondents' Dinner, which Donald Trump is probably not attending, but who the fuck cares?
She'll find some other stupid bullshit to do on the day.
Anyway, I think that she's really funny. I think that could be great. And then, just the Lord smiling down on us, giving us a reason to watch the MTV TV and Music Movie Awards. Tiffany Haddish is hosting.
Yeah.
Very excited.
I just can't wait.
Uh-huh.
Like, anything she does. Even the Instagram video of her announcing that she was hosting was just her being like, I'm hosting the MTV TV and Movie Awards. I apparently can't say that. And it's going to be hilarious because I'm hosting. Bye. And I was like, because there's something about her. She's just so great.
Yeah,
and it makes me, all of her success makes me so happy.
Yeah. Same with Michelle Wolf, too. I'm like, that feels like such a left field choice for Correspondents' Dinner because she's not as established yet, but like I just love that they're like giving her this huge gig and letting her run with it.
Yeah,
hopefully.
No, I think it'll be great.
Yeah.
Was there anything else big? Oh, in our Sabrina report, there's got to be
Sabrina the Teenage Watch.
I feel like that's too much.
Witch Watch.
Witch Watch. Well, I guess because then we could talk about Charmed, too.
Yeah, there you go. Welcome to our new segment that we just came up with on Off the Fly.
Witch Watch. When they inevitably do a TV series of The Craft, I'm there. I'm really there for that. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm not. Please don't do that. God, if somebody's listening, if Daphne the Stars intern is listening, please just don't make a Craft series. So we talked last week about the first auntie cast on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which I'm very excited about. But they announced this week that Miranda Otto is going to be in it, which I think is great.
Yeah. I haven't seen her since Kingsman the Golden Circle. She was the vice president in that. So and specific. She ended up being like frozen. It was really stupid.
Wasn't she on the terrible 24 reboot? Am I
wrong
so. About
no,
that?
I think you're right. The no, other one with a different lead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah, the other one that just came and went because we've hopefully outgrown 24.
It still is not quite enough to make up for this being a gritty reboot. I was so excited with Kieran Shipka, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I... You know, like literally within like 30 seconds of finding out that, you know, she was going to be the star, and I was elated. It's like in this dark, gritty reboot. What? And there's no talking cat. What?
Oh, I didn't know there's no talking
yeah,
cat.
Yeah, never mind. Interest dissipated.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll watch almost anything here.
But or if
does.
They bring the talking cat back, but have Eric Roberts voice it.
Clearly.
No.
No. Not like even with the talking cat. Voice?
No.
No? Oh,
no. I mean, I get your reference.
Yes.
And you've got the right audience here.
Yes.
That was Doctor Who humor.
Yes.
For everybody out there who's...
Oh, no. It was actually a talking cat humor from the film A Talking Cat.
Oh, well, he also is a talking cat. Oh, no. You know what? I got my master's confused. Never mind.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the talking cat in Survival and then lacing it to Eric Roberts in Doctor Who,
the
TV
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a snake thing in that.
Yeah. God damn it.
No.
See?
A talking cat is one of the great cult movies of the last 5 years, and I stand by it.
Who would you want to voice the talking cat?
Well, I would kind of, you know, in a nerd way, appreciate if they followed in the footsteps of the original and got one of the voice actors from Disney. So, of course, the guy who voiced Salem was also the voice of the Beast, the animated Beauty and the Beast. So maybe something in that vein, but I feel like, you know, they'd be more likely to go to, like, a Josh Gad. Which would not fit with their dark and gritty. So
to that end, I guess I would want, I think his name is Jim Cummings. Mm-hmm. He's like the Disney voice guy of the moment. Let me double check and make sure I'm right on that name.
Mm-hmm.
He's the current Winnie the Pooh. He was also the Firefly in The Princess and the Frog, the Cajun Firefly. He's very good. He's done all of these voices, and you'd be like, really?
Yeah.
That was him?
I'll make a suggestion. Just hear me out. Anthony Stewart Head.
Mm. Mm. I feel like too...
Would it be too silky?
I feel like you need more sarcasm in there, which, don't get me wrong, Anthony Stewart Head can certainly do that. But I feel like it might be a little too subtle coming out of Catch.
Maybe.
What about, like, Elijah Wood?
That would... I don't know.
No, not for me.
I was thinking somebody kind of weird. Hmm. Yeah. Weird and small.
Townsend Coleman is crushing it as Midnight on this second half season of The Tick. And, of course, he's a lifelong voice actor. He's done a lot. Mm-hmm. So maybe do that. But I feel like maybe that's even a little too deep. You need something. I would like them to cast
They can
voice
get a bigger name
because
they can
just
have him in a voice booth. Yeah. I don't know.
But,
Mark Hamill.
Let's please put the cat back in Sabrina, please.
Okay. Put the cat back in the bag.
So what are we talking about as our episode of the week? Oh my God, it's so suspenseful.
Guys, it's Legends of Tomorrow. It's back. Had a great episode this week. I'm so, so excited to talk about this with three people who are actually on board for it and not just like the both of us, Allison, and then a third person. All love to Jacob Aller, but like who could not be bothered. Because it just feels like we're our own little family, and we get to like we're our own band of misfits and outsiders. But don't call us those things. What's the name of the episode? Here I Go Again.
Yeah,
and it was just such a wonderful showcase. It was a wonderful showcase for Tala Ash, the new cast member. Because I feel like up to now, like we've introduced her, and she's sort of been, you know, tangentially involved with the whole Vixen storyline, but she hasn't really like gotten a big chance to stand out on her own over much or find her place in the team. She sort of felt like steerage a little bit, but here like she gets this nice moment to show her comedic chops and to show just her wonderful sense of humor and like building chemistry with the rest of the cast. And it's just so Legends that I can't get enough of it. I really want to watch it again. What do you guys think?
It was super fun. I always love a time loop episode. I was very excited when I found out they were doing one. Uh-huh. I absolutely agree that we needed to get a little bit more time with Zari.
Yeah.
Because I don't even remember her name. Right. But she's been very much a functionary of the plot, and she has to be around because the totems are going to come back. And they've not done a good enough job with her development. So having her be the center is not maybe what you would expect, but it works really well for her and to integrate her more fully into the group, which is the whole point. The twist and reveal about Gideon I thought was terrific. But everybody else likes this one more than I do. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. But there are just so many better time loop episodes out there that I have a hard time like just gushing with praise for this one, but I think it was a very solid, very fun episode of Legends that certainly played to the show's strengths.
Yeah. I think for me, it's fun in the context of Legends episodes, but I do agree that's one of the weaker time loop episodes that we've had. Like, I mean, hell, Discovery just had one that was actually like the one time it felt like Star Trek. But yeah, no, I just love the way, she bounced off everybody, especially Nate. I love Nate getting to like finding his place in the team as the goof, because there's always that first step in a time loop episode, right, where she has to trust one other person who will help her get through it. And it has to be Nate. And he's like, Groundhog Day. When you run into me next, say Groundhog Day. And I love that joke where she just runs in Hedgehog Day. I don't know. Just little delayed things like that were great.
Well, but I think the thing that makes that moment great, and I also really love this episode, I smiled the whole time, and then I was surprisingly moved by it. Like, not in an earth-shaking way. I'm not still shook, you know what I mean? But I had genuine feelings about it, and I thought that it stuck the landing in a way it really didn't need to. Like, Legends can just be the fun show, and that's what it is. But the fact that they were able to sort of build this character moment I was honestly invested in with a character I didn't care about at all, I think is really cool. But I think part of what makes that hedgehog moment great is that she says Hedgehog Day, and he says, do you mean Groundhog Day? And she says, yes. And he says, oh, okay, so we're stuck in a time loop? And it's just like the fact that he still gets it, that both he knows himself well enough and trusts her enough as the sort of representative of the team in this story to be able to just immediately get on board a situation where in another story she would have had to convince him every time. And instead it's like he gives her a cheat code so it works every time. Yes. The fun montage, and then being able to say, oh, I already did the fun montage, and he knows what that means, and they just move on. It's just, and I loved the fun montage. I thought that
the
was
cue
great.
Cards.
When the violin comes back, and I want to save the violin for last, because we are very lucky to have Kate here today.
Yes.
Because she just knows like a metric fuck ton of stuff about this shit. And I'm like, I'm learning so much. Thank you.
And we don't just get development for Zari. We get what I think is really refreshing about the show, which is they pretend they're going to build up these long, annoying story arcs and then just subvert them immediately. Like last episode with Constantine, they were going to have the threat of like, oh, Sarah's could still be possessed and you have to put her down immediately. And in a lesser show, in a show that trusted itself less, they would like stretch that out and it would become like this late season reveal. No, they just figure that out. Like, it takes them the slightest of pushes to say like, oh yeah, sorry, Constantine said to like kill you, and she's like, yeah, no, I get it.
It was such a good moment for Rey, because he's very good looking man who the entire time he's been on any of these shows has no social skills, like none at all. So when he's telling these awkward lies and is very obviously having a secret, and she just taps him like one little tiny bit and it just all crashes to the floor.
He's
and then
such
we
a
get
Boy Scout.
Maybe the ultimate Sarah Lance moment when she's like, oh no, you should absolutely kill me if that's what happens, but you're gonna need a lot of help.
Yes.
And it's like the most Sarah Lance anyone has ever Sarah Lanced. It was so great. Ugh, I just love her.
It's great. Well, and also I love like that everyone on the show is shipping her and Ava.
Yes.
It's so adorable. Like, but just seeing them sort of develop.
Totally. And I think that chemistry is really natural, and like I'm very into that. But one of the other things I really appreciated with this Gideon twist, and this I guess is where we have to have a Snydell alert.
Yes.
By the way, if you're not watching Legends of Tomorrow, do you think people have to watch the first season to get what's going on? Don't watch the first season. So don't watch the first season. Be prepared for the fact that there are still some rough patches in the second season. But for the most part, season two, especially around like the 1/3 mark, it starts to really find its footing. By the time we're at the end of the season, it's just having a goddamn blast.
Yeah.
And that has continued so far this season. It's easily the most fun of the DC TV shows, mm-hmm. like by a mile, I think. Because every time it seems like the Flash is going to get back into Funland, it just doesn't. No,
he's too mopey. Barry's too mopey. We can't let that happen.
So, Snidell alert. The thing I really appreciate about the Gideon reveal is it removed one of my biggest complaints about that first Gideon episode because it was basically just a ripoff of the Doctor's Wife.
Yeah.
Here's another Doctor Who reference, right? Where it's like, oh, we're going to bring the TARDIS to life and we're going to like put Rip in a situation where he's...
Who himself is a Doctor Who companion.
Right, yeah. Totally.
Yep.
He's going to wear the trench coat and we're going to do the whole, we're really going to go there.
Yeah.
And by having her come back again, that's no longer what that is. You know what I mean?
Like, she's no longer like a sexual fantasy for him, basically.
Totally. And yeah. She's also no longer just connected with that one person. Now we know that she's intimately familiar with the psyches of everyone on the ship because she knows what they're experiencing and how they would react in this scenario. Because all of them, when she's actually at once Tala is out of her time, sorry, Zari, Tala's the actress's name, mm-hmm. is out of this time loop, everybody responds to it in the way that they were responding in the simulation, right? Like nobody, Sarah believes her and Nate gets it right away and they have this conversation. Yeah. By the way, the sex sounds, can we talk about the sex sounds?
Yes. Oh,
it's
like
so
the clanking metal and the roaring gorilla.
It's filthy and it's just sound effects. And if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't hear it.
It's but very like, Derek's wind chimes. Yeah.
It's very Derek's wind chimes. Yeah. It really is. By doing that, now we have a different relationship. The show has a different relationship with Gideon. And I think it's going to make all of their interactions with her voice more interesting going forward. And I hope that they keep finding ways to bring her in or at least write better for Gideon the voice. You know right. what I mean?
We shouldn't leave this episode without talking about Mick, Rory.
Oh my God.
What it turns out he's been doing in his spare time, writing a sort of Game of Bones-esque piece of space novel erotica. I just love those little bits when they like just show Mick's sensitive side. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just love Dominic Purcell so much. He's just the drunk uncle, and it makes me so happy.
I think that might be my favorite moment of hers, when she talks to Mick so honestly and seriously about this book he's writing, mm-hmm. and that he internalizes it and then goes and sits down on that typewriter and wiggles his fingers and then hunt and peck. That whole sequence, it was just so fun.
Yeah, he's so great.
First of all, we can't not mention the decision to have them all in disco gear the whole time.
Oh, yes.
Sarah's freaking outfit brilliant. Is like basically Dazzler, right? I think.
Yeah, it's amazing. And right down to Ray's like scarf thing that was going
on.
The ascot.
I viscerally need at some point a flashback to that musical number that we were robbed of.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, the thing that does not work for me about this episode is that I really don't care about Nate and Maya at all. And they want me to care so much, and I really don't. And the show has just bombed so spectacularly at the will they won't they's like doomed loves that they've tried to do on the show, like hawk people. And all the stuff with Ray too has been bad. That it does make the stuff with Avalanche really stand out a lot stronger. That's been a very organic progression for that couple over the course of the season. And then what was the last thing? I'm going to talk about the violent stuff later in the podcast. I have like lots of thoughts, but I loved that ending.
Me too.
Yeah.
That was
a beautiful ending.
Well, and I'm sure part of what we'll be talking about when we revisit it in our section where we usually talk about like wigs and dildos. I don't know. Like, we're not going to call it overly specific thing of the week. We're just going to call it wigs and dildos.
Yep.
The one with wigs and dildos.
Yes, there you go.
Maybe, who knows?
We'll see.
I'm sure we're going to talk about some technical stuff there. Mm-hmm. Are you going to talk about thematic things too, or should we do it now?
I mean, whenever you guys
cool.
would like.
We'll just save it. We'll talk about the violin because that moment was just magical.
It's such a
wonderful
band.
Deserves its own little.
Well, and then we're steering into bringing Wally on.
Yeah, I wish that had been the start of next week's episode because the mm-hmm. ending of this one was so lovely, and then it had this tacked on little stinger that I didn't need at all.
It's true. At the same time, I am very much appreciating Wally's man bun.
Apparently, he is great. Keenan Lonsdale?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is great in, what is it called? Love, Sam? The Berlanti movie he's
the
in
movie
that's coming out?
Oh, is he in that?
Yeah,
oh, cool.
I've seen a couple of people talk about how good he is in that movie.
Nice,
so I'm
nice.
Really excited about that.
Nice.
I love an earnest teen movie so much.
Possible sneak preview of things we might be doing later in the month.
Maybe.
Who knows? We'll
Who
see.
Knows?
Maybe if I put it out into the universe, it'll happen.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yes, right.
Anyway, I'm excited about I think it's called Love, Sam.
Well, mm-hmm. him being wasted on Flash is one of my, especially in favor of Dibny this season, has been one of my strongest pet peeves with Flash. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I did not, I knew that he was coming on to Legends next year. I did not know he was coming this year. So I was very excited. Much like when on Jane the Virgin, when, oh my goodness, amazing, Rosario Dawson, amazing actress, Rosario Dawson showed up. I did not know that was happening this soon, so I got really happy when she showed up. I like when he showed up at the end of the episode. I was like, oh, I thought that was yay, something for Rip to do good.
Yeah,
right,
But I feel like he will fit right into that Me cast too. In that show, and he's going to be terrific on there. And if they can, you know, if they are willing to cut where they need to cut, they can tighten up Legends a lot more and just keep getting better and better. I think.
Yeah, I agree. Fear that Amaya is kind of the new Hawk people right now, where they don't really have, they have a lot to do with them. Like, she doesn't really get to have as much fun as the rest of the cast, and her presence on the show is tied into the larger meta plot of what's happening in mm-hmm. the season. So I really hope that they find more things for her to do.
Yeah, I agree.
Nate and Ray are basically the same person. This is like a problem. But I like them together.
No, I think Nate is goofier and Ray is more of a Boy Scout, and I think that, like, they look very similar.
Ray is very goofy.
He's extremely goofy. The writing for them is very similar. It's like they're writing the same character. I mean, I think the actors are playing the material differently, but they have, like, you can imagine all of that episode. Switch what Nate's doing and what Ray's doing, with the exception of the boning and like the being concerned about Sarah, mm-hmm. and it's the same episode.
I would say the episode where Nate is on cat drugs and tries to fly the ship would not have worked as well with Brandon Ralph. So there's that.
But it is,
by the way, watch Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Like, that's like, that can be your tagline. Like, that's how they should be pitching the show to people, because that would get me to watch.
Totally.
But yeah, they need to do something different than the writing for Brandon Routh.
This is a very minor thing, but let me say this. I thought the teaser they ran for this episode all week was perfect, where they just had him saying, "We're stuck in a time loop," like four times, and then you were seeing these little flashes, and then "we're stuck in a time." Like,
I did not see that.
Oh, it was great. It was nice. Every time I saw it, I was like, I can't wait for this.
I was just so excited because one of my students, this was his very first time loop episode of anything.
Oh, wow.
He'd never seen a time loop episode before. So he's sick this week. So at his next lesson, we're going to talk so much about it. I'm very excited.
Oh, that's awesome.
Do you have a curriculum of other time loop episodes?
I mean, I think we could be here all day, you said. But, like, they mentioned Cause and Effect.
Yeah.
I really like the X-Files Bank one.
Mm-hmm. Stargate has a great time.
Stargate is fabulous. It's so through great. The, like, golfing through the thing.
In the middle of my backswing? Anyway.
I'm not a Star Trek person, but I promised Tom I would say, and please correct me if I misquote, mm-hmm. I promised him that in the course of this podcast, I would say, open the shuttle bay doors. Yes? Is that the correct quote?
I'm trying to remember. Is that from Cause and Effect?
Yes.
Okay, probably. I haven't watched that one in forever.
Well, I
just know Frasier's.
Whatever. Tom's not listening to this podcast. Yeah.
Anyway, the week's best.
There was another thing I was going to say about this, and I don't remember what it was. Whatever, we'll come back. Yeah. Oh, no, and I know exactly what it was. When I was preparing for the podcast today, and we were sort of emailing about whether or not this was going to be our episode pick of the week, and I'm so glad it was, because this conversation has been fun. I said, oh, well, and also it's technically a bottle episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think with the exception of that little tag on the end, it is, and obviously there are still some effects in it, but I'm sure it was a big cost-saving episode. And I'm sure they were also able to film other things while the filming of this one was going on. All the things you think about an episode doing, this achieves. But I didn't actually think about that aspect of it until today. I've been thinking about this episode all week, and because I had so much fun watching it, and because there was such a sense of playfulness, and because it was so sort of sprawling in the things that it achieved, I just didn't even think about how restricted it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the mark of a good episode of TV. It's good to have my balloon punctured a little. It's totally good to think about the things that didn't quite work, and there are definitely problems on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Even with that, I still leave thinking, man, that was really fun.
Yeah.
You don't care.
Yeah,
not at all. Not all of them are great actors. Nobody's, especially now that we're post-hoc people, nobody's bad.
Yeah.
But it's just so fun.
It's just, when a show is this fun, you can wallpaper over the cracks a little bit.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's so self-aware. And Anyway.
It's totally great.
It was not a particularly killer week for TV, so this was actually a pretty easy choice. This might actually be a good moment before we get into everybody's individual picks to talk about one of the things we assumed we were going to talk about this week that we didn't talk about because it was so fucking lackluster. And Clint, I apologies, you're just going to have to listen to Kate and I go off
for
a second.
That's fine.
But what a bummer of an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. All Stars.
Yeah. Well, and two in a row now, right? Because mm-hmm. Snatch Game was not as good as it should have been. Mm-hmm. And I talked about this on the Televerse with my co-host Noel. We both have strong opinions about this. How do you waste Andy Warhol?
How do you?
This is a good idea to do with that kind of a branding challenge. But then, how do you not make that its own episode?
I know. Well, because usually it feels a little bit like they just combined two of the standard formats they do, where there's the like branding and self-marketing episode and the ball episode where they have to do three looks on a theme.
Yeah.
So like thinking about in All Stars 2, it was where they had to design the product and then sell the product. And I don't remember most of them, but I do remember Katya's mental illness spray.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was so funny. And it was just, it was the perfect challenge for the people. I think it was Katya and Detox that did really well, mm-hmm. who understand themselves and who know how to sell themselves and who get that, like, here's what's going to be funny, here's what's not going to be funny, and all of that shit. And it just, the soup cans, I mean, first of all, how boring.
Yes.
I would rather have seen them in like design a soup can and then design a look to go with your soup can to help you market the soup can. Would have been way more interesting than wearing a soup can, especially because they obviously just like described what they wanted to a graphic designer.
And somebody else did it.
Right?
Yeah.
And there were still good ones. I thought Ben's was great.
Eh.
You didn't think so?
It was
fine. Like, has won literally everything. It just made me
compared
laugh.
Compared to the other ones, but I mean,
that's a fair point.
You know.
I thought Trixie's was good too. Mm-hmm. But they're just soup cans. It's so boring. And then just a disco look?
That's not a ball. You need to have at least three looks.
And totally.
I only count like one because they had to do the hair and makeup, but they didn't actually design those cans themselves. So they didn't even do two.
You know what would have been fun if it had been like, you had to wear the exact same thing, but in four different color palettes, like you were one of the pop art things.
That would have been a great way
like
to do it.
Any number of things. Any number of things could have worked. And instead, it was just so boring. And nobody was that great. Nobody was that bad. Mm-hmm. I thought Trixie was the clear winner, but it wasn't like anybody was outstanding, and it wasn't like anybody was super duper terrible. And then Aja going home was just like, I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
But she didn't do that badly.
No.
And then on top of that,
is it just me? I feel like Aja's look, not disco, fair enough, but so much better than Ben de la Creme's.
Yes.
Like, are you kidding me? Aja is on the bottom while Bendela is safe with those looks. Is it a crafting challenge or is it a disco challenge? Because they said
that's
it was a crafting challenge.
Honestly, I didn't think BB's look was that great either.
Yeah.
And I didn't think BB's can was great. That felt super producery to me. Mm. Like, her being in the top felt super duper producery to me.
Yes. Well, we have thoughts on that. Do you want to get to that?
Yes. So, I sincerely hope that we're still headed for a BB as a Spy reveal. Because if the reveal is, oh, we just made jokes about The Handmaid's Tale all season. Also, clearly no one on the show has watched The Handmaid's Tale because they don't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And now we're just going to bring back three contestants? How incredibly underwhelming is that?
That's very underwhelming. Now, a theory, though, that I heard, I've read the book a long time ago, I watched the show, but it's been a while, when the handmaids mete out justice, surprised if we are headed...
Participation.
Participation. I would not be surprised if we're headed to a participation at some point.
Oh.
And they're going to bring... So the queens are coming back for their revenge, which will then be they, instead, like, it switches and no longer the winner doesn't pick who goes home. The other queens do. Or something maybe at the end, you know, like Survivor style. But I don't know if that's what they're going to do. I don't know how I feel about that. But then why wouldn't you have all five of the eliminated queens on the stage at the end?
Yeah.
It's very strange.
My hope is that it's going to be something like the next challenge is a team challenge and everybody has to work together and you have to put aside like who's going to be great and who's going to be bad and just do your best to make sure everybody succeeds. And then at the end of it, there's a reveal that BB's been a spy the whole time and she can say honestly like who did that and who didn't.
Who was
and
a
that'll,
team player and who
right?
didn't. And...
Even that is less interesting than somebody has been on the other side of it the whole time.
Yeah.
Because it would be then just this one week and not the entire show. And maybe it's just that we were spoiled by that mirror moment in the second season of All Stars, but it's just so underwhelming.
Well, and if the season was more interesting, if the challenges had been more compelling to this point, we wouldn't be like spending all of our energy between episodes trying to come up with conspiracy theories for ways the show could actually secretly have been good the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, it speaks to the lack of creativity and thought that's gone into some of these challenges, which has me concerned about the launch of season 10, 90-minute episodes. I'm glad Untucked is coming back. I'm so excited about that.
Me too.
Immediately after the end of All-Stars. I like the queens that they announced. Are we excited? Now, you are much more tapped into the drag queen scene, the drag scene here in Chicago. Are you familiar with the Vixen?
I am.
Are you excited about the Vixen?
Yeah, totally. I've only seen her live maybe once, and it was a while ago. She does a lot of shows with a couple of other queens that I like a lot. And, like, I wouldn't have thought, oh, well, maybe the Vixen will be on it. Like, there are Chicago queens I keep waiting to show. Like, when is Dixie Lynn Cartwright going to be on, you know? Mm-hmm. When is Lucy Stuhl going to be on? But, which, by the way, there's a drag queen in Chicago called Lucy Stuhl. It makes me laugh every time.
Perfect.
But I mean, I think that she could be a real competitor, and she's a Southside queen, which I assume is part of why I just haven't seen her stuff that often. But is just beautiful. I mean, the photos are beautiful, and I'm really excited about a couple of the New York queens as well. Mm-hmm. Dusty Ray Bottoms, I think, is really interesting. And then there's an LA queen called Mayhem Miller, who's in the Morgan McMichaels, who's very professional, who writes shitty emails, just like uninteresting. I did a feature for Groupon when I was still writing for Groupon about drag queens' favorite cocktails. And a lot of them, because they're great at self-marketing, yeah. And this was such a bad self-marketing challenge, a lot of them were like, ooh, well, here's my favorite. Like, I interviewed a burlesque duo called Kitten and Lou. That's what they're called. Anyway, they're hilarious. But the email I got from them about their favorite cocktails was what Kitten's from New Orleans, so she loves a Negroni, but she likes hers with a very specific twist. Da, da, da. Yeah. And then Lou likes his manly, right? Just like very funny stuff. And Mayhem Miller was like, vodka rocks. Something like that. Just, I was like, I can't actually use this. Thanks. But it's very professional and cool. I'm hoping that maybe the reason All Stars is so underwhelming is because they've been super focused on the regular season and they rushed it. Yeah. But I don't really know.
Anyway. Yes. Newer to your thoughts on TV. I've caught up with the podcast, but you don't watch Drag Race?
I do not. It's just one of my blind spots.
Yeah. Just dive in.
I know. Well, I'm
like, with how much you like Legends.
I know.
I'm
sure I would have a healthy appreciation for Drag Race. I just haven't.
It's maybe the most memeable show on television.
I'm sure.
Short of The Good Place. The Good Place entering sort of changes that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Like, season 10 is coming up. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, I'm there. Perfect. I have no like ideological or like reasons for not watch the show other than just I haven't found time.
Saying.
Well, yeah, I would start with season 10 if you can.
Yeah.
Because it's just all of a sudden your gift game is going to be better. You'll be able to go back rolls and everyone will know what you mean. Like,
good,
it's just,
good.
Yeah. So let's get into our individual picks, shall we?
Sure.
Why don't we start with Kate's?
Yeah.
Change in tone.
New blood.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is all three of us picked things that are heavy as these.
Yeah.
It's like we got like our little aperitif with talking about Legends, and now
it's time to saddle
three
in for
things
some rough
that are
stuff.
That are considerably heavier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But we're gonna start with mine, and I'm gonna keep it on the Legends Drag Race side of things at least for a moment. My pick for the best TV, the most interesting and compelling TV I watched all week, wasn't close. It was like by a mile. And that was the CNN town hall that aired on Wednesday with some of the survivors of the Parkland shooting and the students and the family members and the teachers, and then with the two Florida state senators, the representative from Broward County, a representative from the NRA, and the sheriff of Broward County, I believe, moderated by Jake Tapper. And here's how I'm connecting it into the lighter stuff. It was so viscerally satisfying to watch elected representatives, we're good on swearing here, do their fucking job and listen to their constituents. And when those constituents say very emotional, powerful things that these representatives, Marco Rubio, want to pretend don't exist or don't have validity so that they can keep taking money from the NRA, have to get booed. Just stand there and get booed by thousands of people. When you won't say, I refuse to take more money from the NRA, he was honest. I'm going to keep taking money from the NRA, and the fact that they're trying to push us to have even laxer gun regulations in this country. And your family and friends all got killed, partially as a trickle down response to that. At least he did stand there and take it, but it was so powerfully satisfying to see that and to watch all week, the past over a week now, watch the profiles of these different, particularly the students, but also the teachers and the parents, their profile raise. This is the first time I can think of with one of these mass shootings where we know the names of the survivors. Mm-hmm. I do know the name of the shooter, but I have to think for a second. I don't have to think to remember Emma Gonzalez's name. I don't have to.
Oh, my God. She's amazing.
And she now has more followers on Twitter than the NRA, by the way.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that. That's encouraging. Amazing.
No, I agree. I only watched bits and pieces of the town hall, but it was just such delicious schadenfreude to watch Marco Rubio squirm like that and have to face the music. Yeah. And I love that one particular moment where he's like, well, I can't do anything short of banning all handguns or whatever. And everyone erupted into applause. Yeah.
He was like,
fair enough. It was great.
Well, and watching different politicians try to interact with their constituencies on this stuff in social media has been hilarious because they are born and bred into this.
Yeah.
Guys.
They know how to work this better
than you
do.
Don't try to do internet things against high school students, yeah. The youths.
The youths.
The youths.
But you'd have to do something crazy like ban all semi-automatic weapons. Yes, this is what everyone in this room wants you to do.
That's why we're doing this.
It might be the best self-own in the history of self-owns.
It was very great.
It was so satisfying. Yeah, I also watched individual segments. I wasn't watching live. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't know how much of it I could have handled watching live. Like, the wimpiest empath ever. I did, I just take on everybody's feelings, and it's very stressful. Working at Apple just about killed me because everyone was angry all the time.
Oh, no.
And it was just like, and then I explode.
I feel your pain.
But the segments I watched, it was incredibly satisfying to watch these people have to sit and listen to these things knowing other people were watching them, knowing that they could just blow them off because they couldn't, because it would be career ending.
Yeah.
What are you going to say to a child who just survived something like this, whose friends died in front of them? What are you going to say? Nothing. You're going to say nothing.
Yeah.
And we're all going to watch. And I think the way that they've responded since then, the way they've been handling things on social media, Jake Tapper's response on social media and the way that he's been batting away people who are trying to suggest that somehow these questions were fed to them.
Oh, God,
and his defense of these kids, the entire thing, I just think it's like an incredible I think it's a moment we're going to be talking about on TV for years.
Yeah, no, the lengths to which people are going to try to discredit these kids, they can't even muster up the intellectual honesty to debate the point. Mm-hmm. They have to be like, oh no, who's feeding these kids? Like, these children are too smart to actually have an informed opinion on this.
No, that's just your kids.
They're only 1 year away from being able to legally own a gun.
Crisis,
what are you
actors
saying?
And that shit.
Oh, God, that was obnoxious.
It was amazing to watch live. I wasn't able to watch the whole thing live. I was an hour behind everybody. But often when you have these significant live events, there'll be one or two hashtags trending or one or two moments going up. While I was watching everybody else was on the second hour. I was on the first hour. Almost everything, all the the trending topics were different elements of the same town hall. So there were at least in maybe it's just my feed, which is a very particular blend of progressive liberalism on my Twitter feed. But it was different names of different people who had been asking questions, the different representatives who were there. It wasn't just, oh, there's one or two people, themes that people are connecting with, and that's what people are talking about. It was every element of it. Mm-hmm. And so it was very compelling. These students have already raised millions of dollars for their March on Washington. They're organizing a boycott of Florida for spring break with different teens around the country. Shout out to George Lamal Clooney, Oprah, Gucci. They've all donated $500,000 to the march.
Nice.
Wow.
So there are several others too, but it's pretty amazing what they're doing so far.
I think one of the biggest rays of hope from all of this is I feel like since the election, we've had a dearth of figures we can rally behind, especially as progressives. We have your Cory's Booker, your Kamala's Harris, your Elizabeth Warren, but they are there. They're the establishment, and there are just as many people who are willing to be they're just, establishment Democrats, and we can't really stand behind them. So I don't know, for some reason it was just really heartening to even just these high school kids who are just really, really passionate about this thing that's very important to them, that's very important to all of us, being able to take that moment and run with it is just really, really encouraging. The fact that we have mm-hmm. people to rally behind, even if we can't like vote for them, you know, I don't know. That's just really encouraging to me.
They grew up on YouTube. They grew up on social media, being in the public, taking pictures and talking as themselves. That's what this youngest generation, like the Z generation, has. They're not afraid of having a camera in their face and being able to articulate themselves and their points. And I mean, it's not surprising that a bunch of the more high profile kids that we've been seeing are the theater kids who are used to speaking in public. So anyone who does not like can't comprehend that teenagers can be this smart and articulate. I've seen a lot of them that are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I'm sure we all were those overly precocious teenagers.
Exactly. And I think the fact that they don't believe that kids this age can be that intelligent and well-spoken mm-hmm. and articulate and considered in their viewpoints says more about them than it does about the kids.
It also says something about how much time they actually spend on the internet. The way that kids are using things, that these kids are using, they've been doing forever. Like sick burns on Twitter. It's just nobody is better at it than 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when we see things like the kid who said, "Man, if you think I'm a crisis actor, you should have seen me in our production of Fiddler. You wouldn't think that." Or I'm particularly fond of "We should rename the AR-15 Marco Rubio because it's so easy to buy."
Yeah, I love that.
Is maybe the most important sick burn in the history of sick burns.
Especially because, it was Laura Ingraham trying to like spin that into, it's like, "Oh, how dare you speak to your elders that way?" Oh,
what
so
would you
obnoxious.
Do if your teen ridiculed senator?
Like, shoot them in the face, I guess. Like, is that what you're saying?
Well, like,
but the response is
what would
to
you
that?
Do to your senator who was able to be ridiculed by a teenager?
Totally.
Oh, it was hilarious. All the different responses. Yeah. Anyways, so that was the most compelling thing I watched, and I look forward to being able to say that in the future with the other things I'm certain are coming next.
Yes. I look forward to Emma Gonzalez's presidential run.
Yeah. Oh, let's not say that.
That's true.
Like, she doesn't necessarily want that.
I don't want to. I feel like we get into a lot of trouble when we. Draft.
Yeah, like with the especially with the Oprah thing, yeah.
Yeah, well, and I mean with any of them, especially if it's women or people of color, when we decide that somehow they're the one to save us, that's an incredible amount of emotional labor we're putting.
Yeah,
even when
totally.
People were trying to like protest Jessica Williams to host The Daily Show, and she had to be like, "Please stop.
I don't
this
want
is not
this.
Like
not
I get to decide what I want to do with my life." You know what I mean?
I
like
won't dance for you. Yeah.
But I will say I'm looking forward to watching these young activists continue to lead. Absolutely. Yeah. What I've been thinking about, and maybe this is a revelation about my mental state at the moment, is sort of the exact opposite of what you've been thinking. Mm. This hopeful watching these kids do this incredible stuff and finding hope in it. I've been filled with, I was a child when Columbine happened. Why the fuck didn't I ever do this? Like, why the fuck didn't anybody my age ever do this? Why? Like, and some of it might just be the moment. Like, obviously there have always been people who've been fighting really hard in this particular arena, and that's been true, you know, for all of my life. But there was never a moment like this. There have been how many school shootings this year?
Yeah.
And it's just never happened. And I think
tools, I don't think.
Also, we didn't have an entire lifetime of watching parents and adults do nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
We thought that the adults were going to take care of it.
Like, help us, Dad.
But now we're the adults.
Yes.
And it's the kids who are doing it.
Yeah.
And
I just register to vote.
Yes, please.
If you're 16 or 17, pre-register.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From that incredibly uplifting moment that I just brought us through. Thanks. We'll just pretend that we're still talking about Hope and Lyndon Sigburns. Let's talk about my pick, which is episode 6 of Ugly Delicious, the new David Chang series on Netflix, Fried Chicken. Spoiler alert, all of these episodes have very simple titles, and it ends up being about a lot more than that. I reviewed this series for RogerEbert.com. I mostly really like it. I do want to warn everybody, you have to be prepared for a lot of, "Hey, it's me and my celebrity friend." There's a lot of that. The peak is when he's having a barbecue in the backyard of his friend, a famous street artist, with another celebrity chef. And then there's somebody else there, Stephen Young. oh, who shows up? Our friend Jimmy Kimmel. And I was like, ah. And granted, Jimmy Kimmel's not in very much of it, and the things that he does say are very endearing. It's like a nice appearance. But it's like, oh, I'm just here with my friend Aziz Ansari. Oh, I'm just having a chat about food with my friend Gillian Jacobs. And you're just like, oh my God, just stop.
We know you're not friends. It's okay.
I mean, they probably are, but it's I'm sure that's part of
are
just
they leaning
getting
into the
people
artifice,
in,
or is it
right?
Just like,
and I think David Chang seems like a very genuine person, and you have to assume that to a certain part, he just wants to talk to people he likes. Outside of that, starting with that sort of negative piece, I really enjoyed this series, and the episodes generally get progressively more interesting, and baked into this discussion of quote-unquote ugly delicious food, of foods that we consider sort of lowbrow or more commonplace or that aren't visually appealing. There's an episode on shrimp and crawfish, for example. Are these incredibly thoughtful discussions of race and culture. Of all eight, the one that I responded the most to was fried chicken, which is both incredibly appetizing. Like, don't watch this series if you're hungry. Oh, everything looks so good. The first episode is on pizza, and I watched it at like 11 o'clock at night, and then my life was over. Like, just all I wanted was pizza. The fried chicken episode, it talks a lot about Korean fried chicken, and it talks about just the different kinds of cultures and the kinds of fried chicken they make, but it gets really interesting when it gets into who is allowed to make fried chicken, who is allowed to profit from the popularity of fried chicken, and specifically hot fried chicken, and what is specifically, say, a black chef to do when they want to make soul food. Do they want to pigeonhole themselves? It's an incredibly fascinating discussion. I know Kate also watched it, so I'm curious to know what you thought.
Yeah, no, it was really terrific and compelling. It felt a little long when I was watching it because I couldn't reach the remote to find out how much longer there was. So I kept, the structure, it's these small segments. So I kept thinking, oh, okay, now it's the end. Oh, it's not. Okay. But it was the compelling all the way through. And every time they would bring up a new topic, it'd be like, oh yeah, of course you have to talk about fill in the blank. I was hungry. I so wanted, especially when they go to the bar and they get those Korean fried chicken strips. And then the Indian thing. It was very compelling. The guests, when they weren't just there because they're famous, were particularly why Gillian Jacobs? Like I don't have no trouble.
She's
with
got a
her.
Netflix show to promote.
But they didn't promote the Netflix
really?
Show.
Really? Yeah. Interesting.
No, it's like when you have David Simon there, I know that he made Treme and is very, you know, knowledgeable about culture, but also specifically food culture and cuisine in New Orleans. So like I know that. I don't know if other people do. But when it was people who weren't chefs and weren't like well-known foodies, like Aziz Ansari is very well-known for being a foodie. It's part of his brand. It was a little confused as to why they were there. But yeah. I particularly loved the segment about when they go to eat the hot chicken and the other chef who's there, you can see his like face turning red. Yes. And he's like starting to die. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, and that's why they serve white bread because you're not supposed to actually touch the chicken. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they get a tutorial on eating hot fried chicken, and it's awesome.
Nice.
I recommend the series overall. Probably you will not have Kate's experience if you watch from the beginning. The episodes are all around an hour long, some just under, but usually they're like 56 minutes, 48 minutes to 56 minutes. But starting with pizza, I think, is like a nice, it like nice. Ramps you up. And then you're able to go on this sort of journey with them. I really, really enjoyed it. And that one in particular was very thought-provoking. And like I said, it just made me incredibly hungry.
Nice. Well, as someone who's catering fried chicken for their wedding, I'm very excited to watch that.
Where
episode.
Are you getting fried chicken from?
Roost.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
You're welcome.
It's almost my birthday, and I can't do this on my birthday proper, but one of the things that I'm doing for my birthday is we're going to Honey Butter Fried Chicken to get takeout and then walk to the Revolution Tap Room to eat the Honey Butter Fried Chicken at Revolution.
That's so great.
I'm very excited about it. If either of you are free, you should come.
Yeah.
Anyway. Clint, what did you pick?
Sure. Well, I picked the other thing they released on Netflix this weekend that wasn't Ugly Delicious or, God help us, Mute.
everybody's making weird noises. Sorry, I ran out of Pepsi.
Right, right. That's the one where they ran out of Pepsi. I watched 7 Seconds. I mentioned it last week. It is the new show from the executive producer of The Killing. I forget her name.
Vina Sood.
And this is an adaptation of a Russian film. And I think that's where a lot of the things I don't super like as much about it step in. It's the premise is this cop accidentally in this like northeast city. It's not New York City, but it's like basically Jersey City. You can see the Statue of Liberty from across the river. He accidentally runs over a young black kid with his car, and his cop buddies help him cover it up, basically. And so it's up to this prosecutor, played by Claire Hope Ashitay from Children of Men, who's a bit of an alcoholic and kind of a mess, and this smart-ass detective, but like in a more caustic way, which is kind of interesting, played by one of the guys from Sirens. He's good in it, at least, to find out who's responsible. And in the meanwhile, we get the glimpses of the home life of the family of the kid who is injured, and spoiler alert, in episode 2 ends up dying. It's fine. That's the whole premise of the show. But the mom is played by Regina King, which is one of the many ways in which it reminds me of a season of American Crime. With all the benefits and negatives that encompasses. I'm largely enjoying it so far. I'm about halfway through, but it is very slow. Right down to, you know, these simple things, like, for example, like having the kid still sort of be alive for an episode or two doesn't really do much to further the narrative, except to give Regina King like a big sort of Emmy worthy like breakdown scene at the end of episode 2, which importantly is the last thing Jonathan Demme ever directed. Yeah, so that was a shocker to me. Like, oh, cut to In Loving Memory of Jonathan Demme, directed by Jonathan Demme. And I just rewatched Silence of the Lambs the other night, which he's one of my favorite filmmakers, so that was a nice surprise. It's overall very well presented, but it's very much, if you like The Killing, you'll like this. If you don't, you won't, because the pacing is very slow, very deliberate. Everyone's a mess. Maybe it picks up in the latter half. I'm still going to stick around and watch it. It's great. I just have problems with it.
Sure. Kate and I we rode here together. Uh-huh. She drives. I mooch. And she said something that sort of resonated with me, which is that not even the presence of Regina King could get her to watch this.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I get it.
Which is sort of how I feel right now. And that is kind of reinforcing all of the things that made me, I meant to watch it, and then I dragged my feet, and then I dragged my feet some more, and then I dragged my feet some more. And I think she is so brilliant, and I just don't have it in me to dive into a dark hole like that right now. Like, no, I just don't.
I totally get it. Everyone's a mess. It's very dark. Even the protagonists, like Claire Hope Ashitay's character is just a complete and utter mess who's like basically literally only finding her conscience now in this particular case, which is inherently interesting. And I think she does a good job of that. But it is it is a downer. So
I have a question, though. Is she having a really hard time with her work-life balance? I just have to know.
She's having a hard time with her work-life alcohol balance.
Okay.
And she does a lot of drunken karaoke.
Oh, well.
That's a tick in the first column. Yeah.
Yeah, we have that in common.
So, I mean, you might find some kinship there.
Did you end up watching it?
Oh, no.
I almost went to a press screening of it that had one of the actors and one of the writers there, but I ended up not going. So,
well, it's not a ringing endorsement, but certainly if you like The Killing, it sounds like the way to go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next, this is normally where we would do last week, this week.
Yes.
And since last week tonight is back this week, we decided to skip it. And instead, we're going to do Reboot Report, which is the other segment that we're rotating in with. Who amongst us is a Lost in Space fan?
I'm raising my hands, both hands, so to make up for it.
Did you hear like the whoosh?
Whoosh. I wasn't a fan of the old show, but for some reason, one of my guilty pleasure movies is that 90s one movie with
judging
Matt LeBlanc.
You hard right now.
I know. You should. And you should. I'm a filthy, filthy person for enjoying it, but I do. I like the production design. I think it's goofy as fuck. I think William Hurt gives some crazy line deliveries in that movie. I love you, wife. And Dr. Smith is really fun. But Lost in Space is coming back. I forgot that they announced this, but Netflix is doing a reboot of Lost in Space, and we just got a date announcement teaser, which is just, you know, the Robinsons walking up to a spaceship. Molly Parker is Maureen, and she's giving this inspirational speech or whatever. Toby Stevens, a.k.a. the guy from Black Sails, is the dad. I know him as the bad guy from Die Another Day. And also Maggie Smith's son. She's not in the teaser, but the reason I'm actually excited for this is that Dr. Smith is Parker goddamn Posey. And I cannot wait to find out what they're actually going to do with that. Like, that's such a fascinating choice, and I really am looking forward to it. And the pilot is directed by Neil Marshall, a director that I like, the guy who did The Descent. So, I mean, we don't really know all that much about it. It's probably going to be bad, but I'm probably going to watch it.
What did you think, Kate?
Oh, well, the trailer's fine. I mean, it's just people walking. But I have a very strong memory of seeing the Lost in Space movie when I wanted to go see Good Will Hunting. I was under the impression it was PG-13. Like, I swear I saw an ad in the paper that says PG-13. But it was rated R, and I'm good at tissues, and I pretty much always have been. So I didn't sneak in. I got my friend to go see Good Will Hunting with me. And then instead, we had to sit in the front row and watch freaking Lost in Space, and it was terrible. And, like,
that's not a fair
trade. My
eyes
were melting, and it was just I was like, this is a bad movie. And
you didn't like Gleep Glop, the space monkey?
Like, we even had, like, my dad came up to the movie. He's like, I'm her parent. I'm giving her my permission to see the movie about the nerds at Harvard. As a, you know, a Whovian, I've seen all of classic Doctor Who. I enjoy sci-fi. I enjoy spaceships. I enjoy campy stupid. I can go with that all day long. But this is going to have to be good for me to overcome my past Lost in Space trauma.
Parker Posey, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Then again, Gary Oldman was Dr. Smith, and then what happened to that movie? Gleep Glop, the space monkey. I hope they have Gleep Glop in there.
What did you think, Allison?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a slick little trailer.
Yeah.
I wasn't super interested until I found out the Parker Posey connection.
Yeah.
But you know what? There are a lot of reboots being announced. It feels like there's a reboot announced every day now. And most of the time I'm like, pass, pass. And this one I was like, huh. Yeah, maybe. And that's, I feel like that is a win.
In these dark times, a show I'm shrug emoji about is, if anything, like a ray of hope.
I mean, this is going to be an incredible month for TV.
Yeah.
So I feel like you'll have plenty of use of the other emojis.
Yes.
Because, God, there's so much stuff coming out this month. It's crazy.
All of which we'll cover on TV Party in the coming weeks, so you should continue to listen.
Some of which, anyway. There's just so much coming out. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. There's stuff where I'm like, why haven't I seen any ads for that? Like, there are things coming out where I'm like, that is the people in this cast, it's nuts. Why is no one promoting this? And it's because there's so much stuff that they're promoting something else because it's not time yet. It's just,
yeah.
Which I think is why, and we'll get to Good Girls when we talk about what we're looking forward to, which is why I'm optimistic about the future of Good Girls, because NBC is selling that show so hard.
Yeah.
You cough while you're watching HBO and you look up and it's an ad for Good Girls, right? Like, it's everywhere. Well, that was a delight.
Indeed.
I don't have a Lost in Space joke to make because that's not my franchise.
No.
You don't think that we'll be in danger, Will Robinson?
That's
like literally the most predictable one you could possibly do. Yeah. The only one I could do.
Well, then maybe we will be in danger of making the only joke that we can think of while we take a break for a second.
Maybe you thought you were seeing Good Will Robinson.
Yeah.
In the theater instead.
Oh, that's nice.
But it was bad, Will Robinson.
No. I don't think the kid ever acted again.
Oh.
It's just him and Jake Lloyd hanging out in a bar somewhere, drinking their cares away.
Hey, but they might be doing better, you know.
Who knows? I would like
it's
to
It's not
think
on
so.
Them. It's on the cast.
No. They are totally blameless in this.
All right. We'll be back. Hey, welcome back. We used the bathroom and that was nice.
Yes.
Fortunately, all went well.
Yes. Yeah, nobody fell in.
No.
I just watched
all
Big
systems
Mouth this
go
week, so actually that really worked.
Yeah, cool, good. Okay, this is a segment of the show we like to call the overly specific thing of the week, or wigs and dildos. Is that what I said 20
yeah,
minutes
possibly.
Ago?
Yeah. Wigs listeners, dildos? Weigh in if you'd rather us have it call it wigs and dildos of the week.
I don't know where dildos came from, because they're definitely like wigs is because of Drag Race, and I'm always thinking what the best wig of the week was. This week the answer was no ones.
Black Panther.
Oh, yeah. Hey, wig to the face of the week.
Yes.
Wig to the face of the century.
Yes.
I don't know where dildos came from. I think I just thought it was funny.
I mean, they go together like chocolate and peanut butter, wigs and dildos.
Wigs really. And dildos. Yeah. Especially if you put the wig on the dildos.
Yes.
Then overly specific thing of the week. This is a portion of the show where we pick something really specific from the week and talk about that. So, Clint, do you want to take us away?
My overly specific thing of the week is the awkward reading of a decades-old AOL chat log of the week. There's another show on Netflix called The Mortified Guide, and I think it's an adaptation of the podcast of the same name, where it's kind of like a Moth sort of radio hour where people go on stage and tell their stories, but specifically these stories are from their childhood and they are reading.
Oh, so it's of Mortified, the show Mortified?
Yes.
Okay,
it's The Mortified Guide is the name of the Netflix show.
All right.
So, yeah, they go up on stage and they tell their stories and they usually, like, read their childhood diaries and stuff. And it gives them insight into, like, the people they formed into. One of my favorites, we watched the whole show. It's pretty great. It's on Netflix. One of my favorites is this these two people, this man and woman who had grown up together but, like, houses apart. They didn't really talk to each other much in school, but they commiserated over AOL, Instant Messenger. And he actually, every conversation they had, he was hopelessly in love with this girl. He had this crush on her. He actually like kept the chat logs in like a Word document called like her name dot doc. And he's like, you know, well, I thought I would read that and have her come up with me and read them together. So they read them like a staged reading of this stuff. It subverts your expectations too, because you think the narrative is going to be like, oh, they didn't pay attention to each other in high school, but then they met each other and they fell in love. And but the thing is, they end up, we drifted apart after a while, but then like we sort of reconnected, and then I married her to her wonderful husband. And like they cut to wedding pictures where he's the officiant. And yeah. So the real lesson of the story is it's really easy to get a certificate online. you know, the Mortified Guide is full of all kinds of really fun stories like that, but that was one that really stuck out to me. It was really cute.
Totally did that. My high school boyfriend, same. I kept a Word doc of all of our Instant Messenger chats. I absolutely did that. Mm-hmm. I don't have it anymore, which is too bad.
Yeah.
But it's, I absolutely history. Did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great one. I didn't realize that Mortified had a TV show now. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really,
it's really cool. It's a good show to see live. Mm-hmm. Kate's pick is...
Yeah, my pick for production, actually giving a damn of the week, is from Legends of Tomorrow. And for those who have not listened to our conversation about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend from last week or earlier this week, or listened to me on the Televerse, will not know that I am actually a professional violinist and have been playing the violin since I was 5. So anytime someone on TV is playing the violin, I'm like, let's see. But I'm happy to report that Tala Ash absolutely plays the violin. She confirmed this on Twitter and Instagram, and pictures of her with her violin when she was young, which is nice. Now, what I don't know is if she is playing the audio that we hear on the show, because she's definitely playing the violin. You can see her posture and everything. It's great. And she's playing the same piece. It lines up very closely, not exactly. They definitely recorded the audio separately in another, because even just like the space wouldn't be right for the acoustics. You know, it wouldn't actually sound like, because they don't have ceilings and all these things, wouldn't have sounded right. But I really appreciate whenever shows have actual violinists or people who have studied the violin to some extent at some point in their life, have been a student of the violin, play the violin, because it's really hard, guys. Like, it's really hard to play the violin. It's a very specific posture. It requires a lot of finesse. It requires years and years of study to sound not bad, just to sound not bad. When there are shows that give the instrument the respect it deserves, I always really appreciate that. And it's easy to use like a time loop to show, oh, they're doing the Groundhog Day thing with the piano, where you're going to learn how to play the piano. In this case, she's going to learn how to play the violin. But the reason they did that is because the actress can actually play the violin. And so they can have her hold it all weird at the beginning of the time loop thing, and then have her actually hold it at the end and show the progression of time. Now, what that means for me is I know how many iterations she must have experienced to get that good. Right? It's like, so that it's the 10,000 hours thing.
Yeah.
Like, she's definitely looking at a solid 5,000 hours to get that good. There's several things about this that I really appreciated. I appreciated the respect to the instrument. If she didn't play the violin, they wouldn't have had her do the violin. They would have had her do piano or something else. So I appreciated that. I appreciated the way they shot it. I appreciated just her like physicality while she was playing. I really appreciated the song choice, which was the Largo from Vivaldi's Winter from the Four Seasons. Now, people who've heard that piece, it's a very famous piece, will know it is not an unaccompanied piece. They could have easily had her do unaccompanied Bach, a piece that was intended to be played by itself. Instead, they chose a piece that is intended to have orchestral accompaniment. And that theme sounds very different when you have the boom, 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 boom underneath it of the orchestra. So it sounds much more melancholy. It sounds much more contemplative than if you have the major chord supporting the melody underneath of it. The acoustics of it were terrific. They didn't smooth out the bow changes. They didn't like hide the little imperfections in the sound, which made it feel much more organic and real, and made it feel like it was her playing. It's basically, they didn't do the violin equivalent of auto-tune. That makes it sound much, much more interesting and compelling and better. I know that feeling of playing solo violin by yourself. Like, you're in like a headspace and you pull up your violin and you just play, and it just captures how you're feeling in that moment. And that the way they shot that, the performance from the actor really captured that very effectively. And using that melody in that way was very interesting. Taking a one piece of a whole, the solo piece of the whole, and removing everything else while she's by herself, not choosing to be with the team in that moment, but choosing to be by herself and finding the beauty in that, I thought was absolutely, totally fitting with what was going on for the character. So it's like this choice in the music and in the composer or the music director choosing that, or maybe it's just a piece that she likes to play if she did the audio. That's the thing, is because I can tell that it wasn't recorded live. Like the audio and the video don't line up. So they, at the very least, they moved the audio back and forth, which would make sense. So they recorded. So I don't know if she played it. If she did, terrific job. If she didn't, she clearly can play just from her physicality and her bow stroke and all that stuff. And I would love to know who did play. There is so much for me to love about that, and so much thought and resonance in those choices that really elevated that for the end in a way that some of their other musical choices. I'm looking at you, second movement of Beethoven's Seventh that was deployed in season two very cheaply by Rip and not earned at all. That really, like this, the more I thought about it, the more I loved it. And it really just, the whole thing just sang beautifully.
One detail I do love about that, though, is that she uses a Stradivarius, which just means at one point they stole a violin from Stradivarius.
Yeah.
Which was great. I just love that little background detail, just more misadventures they got into.
I love having conversations with people who know a lot about something and being able to then have an artistic experience elevated for you because of that person's experience. And I just like that. Yeah, that was great. I mean, that was just great. And now I appreciate that sequence in a new way, because I took a lot of things that you were like sensations that you were talking about from it. Mm-hmm. Like it felt imperfect. It felt lonely, but also satisfying. It felt sad, but sort of joyful. Mm-hmm. I had all of these sensations when I was watching it, which means that they were communicating them well, but I didn't have half the frame of reference that you did. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a testament both to your expertise and to the show.
Yeah, I really appreciate you putting that into context for us. That makes it even more valuable.
It shows what more can be gained if you pay attention to those details. If you care about those details, then as opposed to just having your actor sit behind a piano, shoot so you can't see their hands, and then just like change what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. That's so much more meaningful. Taking a look at your cast's special skills and being like, we can do something with that.
Yeah.
Other shows that have done this very well, Ursula. Oh my goodness, I can't remember her last name. The youngest daughter actually plays the violin, used for a hilarious effect on that show. Maria Bamford, you definitely did Suzuki growing up, and they used that wonderfully in season one of Lady Dynamite. Felicia Day has done a little bit with that, joke asides in The Guild. Mm-hmm. But so every now and again, they get someone who clearly has spent years of their life doing this as a hobby or a passion, and then they figure out how to incorporate it. So thank you, Legends. Much appreciated.
Question. Do you have a similar reaction when a show does the opposite and
so
like highlights it, though? Like, because we have had this conversation where you can tell where someone is not actually playing and it really irritates you. But if it's something like in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, when they're doing Let's Have Intercourse and you can tell that Nathaniel isn't playing the guitar and then he throws the guitar, but the guitar continues and you hear it hit the ground.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So is it like a similarly positive reaction, but in a totally different way?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, because they're not pretending to get away with it.
Yeah.
Or instances. Like when Valencia is playing the piano and this is my movement and she's playing like one key at a time.
Or the FedEx box.
One key at a time.
Or the FedEx box.
Or again, Lady Dynamite when they have, oh my goodness, her pug playing the guitar. Good times.
Oh, yeah, R.I.P. Lady Dynamite.
What was your overly specific thing of the week?
My overly specific thing of the week is a logo that made me gasp of the week because it's so specific and so nerdy and I don't care. I'm very excited about the new artwork for Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. This is apparently the episode where we talk about Doctor Who, even though Doctor Who isn't on the air.
Yeah.
I think it's a really gorgeous logo and I appreciate the ways in which the BBC is going about easing us into basically a whole new television show, right? Mm-hmm. Like certainly keeping the mythology and presumably the storytelling is going to be at least somewhat similar, but new look, new logo, certainly female doctor, and that's new. And then seeing this very modern, very sleek sort of ancient looking logo that they created, I think is just so cool and smart. What I didn't know until we were getting ready to do this episode and Kate told me is they also released the artwork they're using on thing on social, basically. So like the small version where it just says Who. And if they change the name of the show to Doctor Who, that's going to be just deeply weird. They won't though, right?
They aren't. No. They better not. They won't. Be pissed.
They won't.
No, no. Yeah. We talked a little bit and I really appreciate how brittle it looks, how mysterious, as opposed to the big sort of block text, which I did like a lot whenever, like in the Matt Smith, Peter Capaldi era, but it was time for a change. And I think this is the right way to go. I love those like those little lines that sort of streak through it. I mean, and we got that logo video about the TARDIS streaking through the logo. I just, there's something really interesting about it. And I agree, like very sort of ethereal.
Here's a music question. Do you think we'll get a new theme?
Yeah.
Certainly a new version of the theme, but no, a new theme?
Oh, no, they're going to keep the same theme, but they will reorchestrate it and they will have, like, there's, I have a piece I could write easily about the progression of the Doctor Who themes and what they say about the different eras of the show. I would love
that. That would be fantastic.
If you guys want to pay me to write about that, I mean, I'm just saying.
Because I think Murray Gold's gone too, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I've heard rumblings that he's gone. That's just like for the first time, like not doing Doctor Who music in over a decade, which means we might actually be able to hear what people are saying.
What? Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I love some of the themes, but I'm not a big fan of a lot of the scoring.
It's decent, like concert music, but it doesn't work. Yeah, no, really.
I disagree. That's okay though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like it, but I don't. It's less effective usually in the context of the show itself.
My favorite version of the Doctor Who theme is whenever anybody tries to just sing it and they go like da 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 da. Like that's my favorite version always.
Yeah.
That is not a suggestion for a cappella groups. Don't do that. That's just like when somebody is sitting at home being like, "Oh, I'm so excited! I get to watch Doctor Who." Da 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 da. For our next little chunk, Clint, do you want to take us into it?
Allison, what is your favorite thing you're looking forward to this coming week in the television?
I have so many things because March is like a crazy good month for TV. There are so many things coming out and a lot of them are incredibly promising. Mm-hmm. There are these casts where it's like, here's the show you haven't heard very much about, but David Strathairn's in it. Here's the show you haven't heard very much about, but Tobias Menzies and Jared Harris and Ciaran Hines are in it. Oh, all three of them. Yeah. All three of them.
The terror and the genre.
Yeah.
Based on a book.
Oh, I'm very excited about it. Also, Tobias Menzies is just really good. Jacting. He's good at jacting.
That's good.
Acting.
What do I know
jaw.
Tobias Menzies from?
Rome. It's a Rome reunion.
Yeah. Oh. Rome. Also, Outlander. Also, Game of Thrones. He's Edmund Tully. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh.
He's the wimpy Tully. He's the groom at the Red Wedding.
Gotcha. Is he the sort of chisel jaw guy? Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
He acts with his jaw and it's amazing.
Yeah.
So there are lots and lots of things coming up I'm excited about, but there are like three things in the next week that I'm excited about. One thing that's airing tonight as we're recording, but which I'm sure we'll be talking about next week, which is Anna Deavere Smith's Notes from the Field. If you've never seen an Anna Deavere Smith performance, I'm assuming there are a bunch of them in the HBO archive. I've seen them, but I haven't checked recently. She is a writer and performance artist who writes these essentially docu-plays where she interviews a bunch of people about a specific thing and then compiles all those pieces into a one-woman show that she performs herself, and they're incredibly compelling. And she's doing one about essentially the Black Lives Matter movement, among other things. And she's incredible, and I just can't wait to see it. So that's airing on HBO tonight, which is, we're recording on a Saturday, so by the time you hear this, it will already come out. I am also very excited for McMafia, which is the aforementioned David Strathairn show. But my pick is The Looming Tower, a Hulu series about the lead up to the September 11th terrorist attacks, with a focus specifically on a Muslim American FBI agent. But that is an incredible cast with a terrific writer at the helm. God, what the hell is his name? Dan Futterman, who also wrote Capote, who's been behind some other solid TV shows. So I'm very excited about that. I will also be reviewing that weekly for the AV Club. So if you are looking to talk more about that one, you can find me in the comment sections there. I think that Hulu is just really on a roll. And they do some great work with miniseries. 11-22-63 was pretty good. And there have been some others. So yeah, I'm very excited about The Looming Tower. Mm. And adaptation of a Pulitzer Prize winning piece of nonfiction.
Ooh, yeah. Excellent.
Jeff Daniels, Alec Baldwin, Michael Stuhlbarg. Michael Stuhlbarg, who was robbed of an Oscar nomination this year.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really
crazy. Wait, he wasn't nominated?
No. Oh, he's not nominated. He didn't get nominated for either movie.
All three movies he was in. Yeah. Like, all three amazing movies he was in. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm still pissed about it. No Call Me By Your Name nomination and no Shape of Water nomination.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Kate, what's your pick?
Everything is coming back next week and starting, so there's a million of them. I know people are very excited for the return of iZombie. I'm always a Debbie Downer on that one because I'm like, it's fine. Atlanta is coming back for Robin season, mm-hmm. which will that'll be very interesting to see what it does. But I the one I wanted to mention was and spend a little more time on is Good Girls, which is a new show that is premiering that I really hope it's good.
Yeah,
I've seen
too.
The first episode and it has some really promising elements and some overplayed elements that could take the show in a less compelling direction. So we'll see which way they steer into. Mm-hmm. If they steer into the more dramatic or the more comedic. The comedic is particularly strong. But it's about three mothers and housewives played by Christina Hendricks and the younger sister is played by Mae Whitman and then the friend is Retta. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that there was that sister bond between the two white leads. But yeah, so they're related. But who decide to start into a one-off life of crime that, of course, escalates and things, you know, get complicated. There are elements of it where it wants to be Breaking Bad, which are less interesting to me. There are elements that are more screwball comedy. We'll see which way they go, how they thread that needle. They can't go too far either direction, I think. So it's about maintaining a middle balance. And I think a middle ground, I think that's what'll work best after one episode. Clearly, I know what I'm talking about more than the people who created the show. But that's sort of where I'm at with it. But they're all those three actors, of course, are amazing, have been for years. It's great to see them get some new material and different kinds of material. We also have Matthew Lillard as one of the husbands, who is perfectly cast and is very good. Like
he's having a great second spring.
I've really enjoyed Matthew Lillard the last several years. So he's really good in his role here. And then is it David Hornsby? Rickety Cricket. And is very good too. I want to say it's David Hornsby, but in his smaller role. So
you're right.
There are several episodes out available to critics. I've only seen one. The other reviews I've seen have been more tentative than I feel after the first. Mm. So maybe temper that. But how much do we all want Christina Hendricks and Mae Whitman and Retta to get good mm-hmm. material?
Right, right. I feel like not giving them good material will be pretty sinful.
Yeah.
Like that you have it's that talent, wrong. Don't waste it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's also from a former writer and I think producer for Scandal. Mm. So there's like a good side and a bad side to that, right? Like there's a lot of upside on a good writer from Scandal. There's a lot of downside on a not so good writer from Scandal. So I'm optimistic both because of the cast and, as I said before, because NBC is so obviously behind it and like they think they have something, which doesn't mean shit. Like it really doesn't. Yeah. They're NBC, every network has always been behind something where you're like, why this one? But
this is the hill.
It's the exactly. Those three actors are just so great. They've been so great independently. And there's something about that combination that's really appealing. Like it feels at first I was like, that is like a grab bag of people I like. And it doesn't make any sense for them those three people to be together. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I just made, because I can see Christina Hendricks with either of them. I can see Mae Whitman with either of them. I can see Retta with either of them. It was just how I was having a hard time seeing the three of them together. Now that I know about this sister connection, it just like, I'm just really into it.
Nice,
I'm so excited to see all three of them get more work. So I'm excited about that one coming back too. And our own LaToya Ferguson will be covering that show weekly for the AV Club. So there's already a review on the AV Club, I'm assuming for the first three episodes, from Gwen Inhat, but you can find LaToya's coverage weekly at the AV Club. You can also read LaToya's early thoughts on Atlanta season 2, Robin season, at consequenceofsound.net.
Excellent. My thing I'm looking forward to, I guess I have a couple small things. Third season premiere of Unreal, the one show on Lifetime I think people can like take seriously a little bit early. You know, it's fun and it's an entertaining show. I think it's a good drama. It's been 2 years since the second season, which I didn't actually watch, but I watched the first season. I really enjoyed it. But yeah, it's coming back for a third season. Shiri Appleby, Constance Zimmer. I'll watch Constance Zimmer in anything, basically.
Yep.
It's got the first female suitor on the show, which will be another sort of fly in the ointment. A bunch of different contestants, including Terry Chen, who activates my superpower, which is recognizing Vancouver-based sci-fi actors. He's also in The Expanse. I'm just looking forward to that. I'll probably try to tune back in to see whether it's good. The other thing I'm going to look forward to is the return of Ash versus Evil Dead, mostly because I haven't watched as much of the show as other people do, but I know people who love the show and are looking forward to it. I might try to use this opportunity to jump into the show. Season 3 is starting. I mean, Lucy Lawless is in it. You can't really go
wrong.
Oh,
I didn't know that. That's
yeah,
awesome.
I think she basically plays evil. So that's pretty great. One of the main reasons I bring it up is I think we have coming up on COS an interview with between our illustrious editor, Michael Rothman, and Bruce Campbell himself.
It's already up.
He of the jutting chin.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be great. So check that out and check out Ash v. Evil Dead, Dawn of Justice when it comes back.
I just drop in occasionally on the show. It's not my cup of tea, but he's just so much fun to watch. And speaking of people, I will just watch in anything. I will watch Lucy Lawless in anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anything. Always and forever. And speaking of time loop episodes.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a great time loop episode of Xena.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The one episode of Xena I remember is their Christmas episode, which was A Solstice Carol.
Uh-huh.
Our very last and easily our most important segment.
Yes.
Clint, what is the Discovery special title of the week?
Well, I perused Futon Critic for the craziest thing that Discovery's putting out, at least in terms of strangeness of title. So I found Street Outlaws versus Fast and Loud, Build to Mega Race Gear 4, which sounds like the title of a goddamn anime. But I watched a little preview for it on YouTube. I just found it. And it's just a show about like middle-aged white dudes with like bowling shirts with flames on them, just racing their cars. And I couldn't be less interested. I want the show that the title promises me.
Yeah.
I want some speed racer bullshit. Like, I want people racing around curvy canyons and using like automated jacks to jump over other cars and people speaking really fastly about the dangers that are ahead of them and then having people secretly be Speed's brother. That's all I want. But alas, Discovery cannot deliver.
Now I wish that Speed the movie were about Speed and Speed's brother.
Yeah.
That's what I want it to be.
Yes. The sequel to Speed should have been just Racer X.
Yeah. This reads to me like a word jumble. Yeah. Like somebody took a sentence and then rearranged all the parts of the sentence, and that's what we have.
Yeah.
That's a really great title.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the best one so far.
Perhaps. Yeah, it feels like someone just took like an issue of NASCAR magazine and just like cut out all the words to make like a little ransom note and just jumbled it all together and just glued various words together, and that's what they formed.
You know, sometimes you say these titles and I immediately want to watch it, and then of course I forget because I just like there's just too much TV, but yeah. This is not one of those times.
Yeah.
I would, however, watch a show that was just called Street Outlaws versus Fast and Loud.
Right.
Like whatever that is, I would just watch Street Outlaws versus Fast and Loud.
I watch Street Outlaws versus Fast and Loud.
You know what? I would
Evil
watch
Dead.
A show called Fast and Loud, especially if it was an intimate character drama.
Indeed.
Right? If it was like
David Simon's Fast and Loud.
Sarah Polley's Fast and
yes.
Loud.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm all about it.
Well, that is going to do it for us. Unless, Kate, do you have any thoughts about the Discovery special?
Well, I was just, because I was thinking, oh, could you do like Chuck style, Street Outlaws versus, and then each episode is a different versus.
Yeah.
But I do like the Fast and Loud better, though.
Yeah. Better. What if it's Fast and Loud versus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fast and Loud versus Howard's End.
Right. And it's a buddy cop thing with someone named Fast and someone named Loud.
What if it was actually like a show called Fast and Loud versus a show that's something else and they just intercut them together?
And crossovers.
And then you have to decide who wins. And then whoever wins gets a pilot order and whoever doesn't.
Ballistic Fast versus Loud.
Something.
Yeah, I don't
something
know.
Something like that.
I want the irony of Fast being really quiet. And Loud really
Loud.
Slow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go.
There we go. Oh, now, now I'm on board with the buddy cop idea.
I want to know which one is the robot or animal.
I think that's the chief.
Chief?
The chief is a robot hawk.
And the animal is their pet, Volume.
Yeah, there you
yes,
go.
Yes, right.
Or maybe they have two cats and they're called...
No, their car is Volume because you can crank it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. And their cat is named Density.
Yeah.
Because they got him and they tried to name him... Well, they thought he was a she, so they were going to name her Destiny. Yeah. Then they figured out that she was a he, and so they changed it to Density. Thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Twitter at TV Party COS. You can also find us all individually on Twitter. I'm there at Allison Chu. You can also find my other podcasts, Podlander Drunkcast and Outlander Podcast, which is exactly what it sounds like, at PodlanderCast. That's, I was about to say, at gmail.com, which is not a thing. And you can find Debating Doctor Who, a podcast about Cheers, at Debating DW.
Sidebar, we should really start actually tweeting from TV Party COS. I don't think either of us has done that.
We should do that.
We should probably actually do that.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, yes, you can find me on Twitter at Alcohollywood, and you can also find my dulcet tones on the other podcasts, Alcohollywood, which you can find at alcohollywood.com, and Nathan Rabin's Happycast, which you can find at nathanrabin.com. I believe if you go to Happycast, the next episode we'll have a special guest, Elliot Kalin from the Flophouse.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. He's the guy. He used to be the head writer for The Daily Show.
Oh.
And now he's the head writer for the New Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He's a real fun dude. We talked about Tales from the Crypt for an hour.
I'm going to listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah, Kate, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at The Televerse. And The Televerse, like I said, is my weekly TV podcast. In case this is not enough of me yammering on about things, you can go check that out as well.
You should. It is excellent.
Thank you.
TV Party is a production of the Consequence Podcast Network. Check out our expanding roster of music, film, and television podcast programming at consequenceofsound.net.
You can leave us a review on iTunes.